With Ed Show, we welcome you to the program. You may have noticed that at 8:30 this morning, when we normally speak with Mayor Bob Whalen, our phones just went crazy, haywire, wacko, as they say. And with good fortune, Mayor Whalen is always the most patient of our guests. Thank you for calling back this morning, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
I'm great, Ed. Yeah, glad we could do this special edition here.
It is a special edition. It's a treat for everyone about to go have lunch right now. Thank you so much for taking. I know how busy you are, and when we tried to reschedule, man, I know I got a call at 10:15, 10:30. So thank you so much again. Let's talk about the big news first, in that there's a new sheriff in town, and that sheriff is Police Chief Jeff Calvert, right?
Yes, Jeff had. Of course, he's been with the force, you know, for 25 or more years. He was interim chief here for the last couple of months, and our, you know, new city manager made the decision earlier this week to make it official and appoint him as chief. I had a chance to congratulate Jeff last night, and he's very excited, and he's a member of the community and with his family, and I think he's just going to do a great job for us.
Right. I got to be honest with you, though I never, you know, try and go one side or the other or influence anything. I thought it was a no-brainer pick. I thought really that was the obvious choice, in the fact that, you know, you go get coffee or you're at the grocery store, you run into the police chief. He lives right here. This is like a really cool thing to have. And also that his experience, he spent time on the Homeland Security Drug Interaction Maritime Team, the Drug Recognition Expert Team. He's had a lot of stuff. He's got a ton of experience.
Yeah, he really does. And, you know, he's connected to other communities. When we were a year or so ago experiencing the loud vehicle noise problems, Jeff took the lead on that, and he got a coordinated effort with all the cities up and down the coast to have allowed vehicle enforcement action. So I think he's the right guy for us.
Right.
And I know he's going to work hard and do a great job for us.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned the loud vehicles. I've actually noticed in the last year a reduction in the loud vehicles that we hear on Coast Highway. You can actually hear it from, you know, a couple of blocks up the street sometimes. So I've actually noticed a reduction.
I think so. I think it's gone down. You know, every once in a while we get, somebody from Talladega Nights down there. But for the most part, I think we have improved it. We haven't completely stamped it out, but I don't think you could do that anyway. But right. No, it's been a great effort.
Right. Now, you and I spoke about this last week, and that's Senate Bill 9. that State Senator Dave Minn voted for. And in talking about it, it's really just like a blanket for all communities, and Irvine's needs are much different than our needs, and our needs are different than Santa Ana's needs. I understand that Assembly Member Cody Petrie Norris has stated she's going to oppose it on the floor of the Assembly. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, she. We had letters, of course, out, multiple letters out to Cody and to Senator Minn, you know, urging them to oppose it unless amended, because we, like you say, one size does not fit all. It's not right for our community, and given our impaired access neighborhoods and all kinds of other factors, you know, public safety oriented factors in particular. So, earlier this week, she confirmed that she'll be, to me, that she'll be opposing on the floor SP9, unless it's amended, to allow a bit more local tailoring.
Right.
We'll see. I mean, housing is it's a huge issue in the state, and everybody agrees with that. It's a question of, is this the right solution? We don't think so. And, I know a lot of cities in Orange County, just from calls I've been on with other mayors, feel the same way. They want to solve the problem, but they want to do it locally.
Now, specifically, what type of amendments would you look for in order for it to fit us?
Well, you know, I think there's actually a couple bills, SB9 and SB10. And SB10, you know, if you interpret it, would allow basically take single family zoning and allow, you know, depending on who's interpreting the bill, up to 8 or 10 units per location, which is just, not believable. But I think if there were more local discretion, in terms of, you know, citing these allowing the increased density, you know, let the locals determine it. Don't just say it anywhere in your city. And I think the other kind of amendment really that I'd be interested in is there ought to be some, you know, if you're producing local housing and you're doing your share, you know, you ought to be that ought to govern, right, as opposed to some state override. So those are the kinds of amendments I'd want to see.
All right.
But it's going to be interesting to see where it goes.
All right. Please keep us in tune, please. We got a $750,000 grant from the California Office of Emergency Services to develop the Park Avenue Fuel Modification Zone, and we've appropriated $1 million in the Wildfire Mitigation and Fire Safety Fund for the project and increased estimated grant revenue by about $750,000. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this ties into our evacuation, you know, time study that we did as well and reviewed at council. So what we're doing there on Park Avenue and Bluebird's another example, and then Coast Highway, we are trying to make sure that the evacuation routes, major evacuation routes from the hillsides are clear and, you know, would remain open during emergencies. So on Park Avenue, there's a little choke point at the bottom, and as everybody knows, once you come down the hill and, you know, you transition to that, and there were... there's utility, above ground utilities there that we're going to be undergrounding so that there's not the risk of blockage in a time of emergency due to overhead utility lines. And then we'll do the fuel modification, you know, to hopefully keep that area safer for, you know, for residents all the time in terms of fire and in particular during times of evacuation. So, okay. It's a good improvement. We also had on the agenda the other night, you know, the widening of the exit at Bluebird Canyon. We're adding a lane there, undergrounding utilities again. The Box Canyon is only one way out. So these are great steps we're taking to implement, you know, the certain parts of the wildfire mitigation safety plan.
Right. Now, in widening that area of Bluebird Canyon, are we looking at like and before we had the work on Coast Highway, we were all worried about the traffic congestion, and that really never took place. We were able to get around that. Are we going to be having the same kind of getting around the Bluebird traffic problem that we're expecting?
I think we're going to be able to manage the traffic there. I mean, with any project like that, you know, traffic management is part of it. I don't think it's going to be, I mean, there'll be some inconvenience, but right. I don't think it's going to be too bad.
Okay. So the sky won't be falling. That's not a sky. Sky is falling situation. Good. Thank you. You also extended the emergency declaration related to COVID-19 for another 60 days.
We did. And, you know, with the Delta variant, and we've seen, you know, a number of actions taken around the state in response to that. That'll just continue in the city manager, the powers, okay. The emergency powers, if needed, to take any further action.
Okay. And tell us what happened about with purchasing the properties. The adoption of the initial study mitigated for the negative declaration for the acquisition of those two properties on Coast Highway.
Right, the former Tiamo restaurant site. We were, before a public agency like the city can buy a property, we have to do an environmental analysis. The mitigated negative declaration is what we did. It was several hundred pages, I think 600 and something pages with all the comments. So it was a thorough analysis of it, and it just looks at whether, you know, a public acquisition of it has any significant environmental impacts. And the conclusion was it did not, with certain mitigation measures that were included in there. So we approved the mitigated negative certified the mitigated negative declaration and authorized the city manager to conclude the purchase, which is set to occur on September 6th.
Okay.
So we'll be owning it in a week or so.
All right. And the thing that everybody's been talking about the last couple of weeks, can you give us an update on Hotel Laguna and what happened Tuesday night?
Right. So, you know, staff kind of presented the current status of improvements over there at the hotel. I mean, as everybody knows, there were, you know, a number of stop work orders. We reaffirmed on Tuesday night the plan that staff has to, that we reaffirmed their partial lifting of the stop work order and their plan to have the hotel and lobby opened on a temporary certificate of occupancy once all the, you know, all the work's completed and the inspections are done and, you know, all the clearances are given. And we also had commissioned a city structural engineering analysis because there was a concern that, you know, none of the work that was done in there would have caused a structural issue. That independent analysis confirmed it did not, and it was safe to occupy. So I think what staff said is, you know, they're thinking maybe end of August they would have all these, you know, the inspections done, and they'd be granting us a temporary certificate of occupancy. So it sounds like sometime in the next couple of weeks, the hotel, lobby, and restaurant will be open. Excellent. And I've toured it, and it's, you know, it's a beautiful renovation inside. So I think people will enjoy it once they get in there.
Yeah. How great did it feel when you toured it? How great did it feel to look out those giant windows and see the ocean from Hotel Laguna again? That was pretty cool, huh?
Well, it's the best view in town. I mean, you're right there, and you know, it's a beautiful new treatment of the restaurant on the inside, and it redid the bar, and I think it's going to be a popular spot. Yeah. So we'll all enjoy that.
Agreed. Just a couple of more things before I let you go. You also received the wildfire mitigation and fire safety update of the project implementation, and now you're going to analyze it, I imagine. You're going to go over it. What exactly, how long will that process take?
Well, the evacuation time study that was done, you know, which I think you and I touched on briefly in one of our earlier calls, you know, says to empty the entire town in an emergency would be, you know, about 4.5 hours, 4 hours and 20 minutes, I think, something like that. And then it has a whole bunch of analysis of, you know, different, what if you're having to evacuate this neighborhood, what's the time, what if, you know, other, what if Laguna Canyon Road is closed, how does that impact the timing? So as staff correctly said, it's a ton of data, and it's a planning tool for us. So they're going to take that and look at our current evacuation plans and see what they do with this information to modify our evacuation plans, you know, develop new evacuation plans. There are ways we can improve, you know, the rapidity of an exit. So I think we'll be hearing back from staff, you know, over the next 6 months or so as to what they're doing with this information and how they're kind of acting on it to, you know, make us more efficient in an evacuation process. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to that. They're working hard on it. Our EDPC committee, Emergency Disaster Preparedness Committee, there's 10 members. They work really hard. They care about this stuff. They think about it. You know, we're in a high-risk area, right? That's not going to change, but we can be smart about it, and I think we are being smart about it. So it makes me feel good that we've got really quality people working on it.
Yeah, and the entire town knows that the wildfire mitigation has been on your front burner for forever. You've been concerned about this forever, and thank you so much for the attention that you pay to it as well. Let's talk about Halloween for a second, if we can. We love the Halloween celebration on Oak Street. And I'm hearing from citizens that they wanted to do porta potties that they hadn't been able to do, as in some cases it gets packed up there. In some cases, people knock on your door, hey, can I use your bathroom? So the people on Oak Street, I guess, wanted porta potties on a couple of different ends. Is that the citizens' responsibility of Oak Street, or is that a city? How does that work? Whose responsibility is that?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I think it's probably a good idea, just given the number of people who are over there, right? And it probably makes sense. The city grants the permission to close the streets. I mean, we have to do that, and we do the, you know, we block the streets and provide that. But I would think the neighborhoods would provide the porta potties, but, you know, it we'll see. Maybe they'll make an ask of the city, but I would think that would be provided by the neighbors.
Right. And finally, before I let you go, you know that on Tuesday we lost an icon, Rolling Stones drummer Charlie Watts, 57 years with the Rolling Stones. And of course, he had his own jazz quintet. You gave me a really interesting tidbit about him. And before we go, I want you to hear some of his music. But you did tell me that you've obviously been a Rolling Stones fan for a long time.
Right.
So tell me about the cover song they did.
Well, so, you know, I read the obituary. I'm sure a lot of people saw it. But, the first cover they did, which was interesting, was in February of 64, actually, they covered Buddy Holly's Not Fade Away, which, you know, was obviously a great piece of music.
Yes.
But it was a couple months later, in June of 64, that they said they had the first number one hit in Britain. The Rolling Stones had their first number one hit in Britain. And it was a cover version of Bobby and Shirley Womack's It's All Over Now. So, you know, just an interesting bit of history. Clearly they got onto their own music. But early on they were doing some, you know, some neat covers of American music. So just an interesting piece of news there.
Thank you. And I'll end with interesting stuff here that Ben Waters did a tribute album for the Rolling Stones' first keyboardist, who was Ian Stewart. And on that tribute album, they essentially just turned everything over to Charlie and had Charlie arrange it and produce it. And it came up, it was a great album. Charlie, of course, has had his own jazz quintet. And this is a song from the blues portion of that, from the Ben Waters portion of that, along with Keith Richards, Bill Wyman, Ronnie Wood, Charlie Watts. We have Mick Jagger. This is a song called Watching the River Flow. Mr. Mayor, as always, I'll lead you out with that. But as always, I want to thank you for taking the time, especially today, for being patient with our phone system and talking with us.
Thanks, Ed. Glad we had a chance to do this, and have a great day.
Me too. Enjoy Watching the River Flow as we take off. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. It's the Mornings with Ed Show, 11:39.